We always love Wednesdays and having the opportunity to chat with Greg Cosell of NFL Films here on the 180. We are queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Greg has now been with NFL Films for over 40 years, and he's joined us weekly going on 7 years. Film analysis you will not find anywhere else. Greg, hope you're doing well.
Jonathan, I'm doing great. Glad that the trio is all together today, you know?
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
I know. We are reunited. Ready to go. Yeah, can't wait to discuss Ryan Tannehill with you again this week. We started last week by discussing his first down passing, and this week we get into third down opportunities for Tannehill since he started his first game for the Titans against the Chargers in Week 7, which was last October. The numbers on third down, he was 51 of 79 for 702 yards. On third down, he completed 64.6, we'll say 65% of his passes, and was sacked 13 times. Tannehill threw it when the wide receiver then got open. Marcus Mariota waited until they got open to throw it. We discussed that last week. Tannehill's let-it-rip approach, in thinking about the third down numbers, Greg, that let-it-rip approach fits well with what Arthur Smith was scheming up.
Well, I think in general, on third down, because most coaches will tell you that on third down, particularly third and longer yardage, let's say 6 or 7+, the defense tactically has the advantage. They put their faster players on the field. They do more in terms of front looks and pressure concepts. And as a quarterback, you're going to have to make some tough throws. And you still have to make throws from the pocket in this league. So you're going to have to make some difficult throws, and you have to be willing to make those difficult throws. And Tannehill was willing to turn it loose versus tight man coverage. And I think that that is a critical starting point, because if you're not willing to do that, you'll not be very successful in the NFL on third down.
Let me jump in there. You talk about willing to turn it loose. And I automatically go to the first 6 games of the season last year, and there was an unwillingness to turn it loose. How striking. I know you weren't looking at Marcus Mariota in this context, and the conversation here is about Ryan Tannehill, but you have a strong sense of what Marcus Mariota did and didn't do. And our conversation throughout the beginning of the season was about his unwillingness to turn it loose and how it was driving us crazy. Just from your recollection of that, how different was Tannehill in that regard?
I would say markedly different. And, you know, I've had an opportunity, obviously, during this pandemic. I'm home a lot. We're all home a lot more. So I've been talking to a lot of coaches who I know well, which I normally don't get a chance to have lengthy conversations. And this idea of turning it loose, most offensive coaches will tell you that that's in a guy's DNA, that it's very difficult to teach a guy to make difficult throws. He's either willing to do that, it just happens, or you don't do it. And again, I'm not going to speak exactly to what's in Marcus Mariota's mind. He's no longer their quarterback. He's not really a factor as we look at the Titans and go forward. But I think that that was one of the issues that we always talked about with Marcus. And when you look back to his college career, he played in a system that was very, very effective in college, and he threw to a lot of wide-open receivers. So he just may have been one of those quarterbacks that did not have that in his DNA, whereas I think Ryan Tannehill does.
And, Greg, I don't want to make this too much about a comparison with Marcus Mariota, but I remember in your evaluation of Mariota, you would say he's not really a driver of the football in terms of arm strength. When you watch that effectiveness of Ryan Tannehill on third down, how much of a quote-unquote driver of the football is he with a strong arm and ability to get it into tight spaces?
Well, I think Tannehill's got a stronger arm. And even though arm strength, and people can debate, reasonable people can draw different conclusions as to what arm strength means and the value of it, but I think there's always throws in a game. There might be 2, there might be 4, there might be 8. It depends on the game, the situations, the team you're playing. But there's always throws that require you to drive the football into tighter spaces. And I think Tannehill, number one, he's willing to do it, and number two, I thought he threw the ball with really good ball placement on third down. And that's where it's absolutely critical, because third down, you're going to have to make tougher throws. And I thought he was consistently accurate, making some, you know, some tough throws, and they were outstanding throws.
And that doesn't always have to be a deep pass or an intermediate route. And I'll give an example of this. I went back and watched some of the Titans-Chargers game last night, the Tannehill's first start for the Titans. And there are some great examples of how different he was at quarterback in this first start. Start of the fourth quarter, a long drive for the Titans. And on second and goal from the 10, an example of fitting the football in tight quarters, he splits two defenders on a pass to Jonnu Smith that went for 5 yards. But it sets up a third down touchdown to Tajay Sharp. Greg, you detail a well-designed concept from Arthur Smith for the Sharp touchdown that created a void in the Chargers' defense, that zone coverage. And Tannehill executed that play perfectly.
And that's a case, too, where you understand the defense you're playing against. Gus Bradley is the Chargers' defensive coordinator, and he's a high-percentage zone tendency coordinator. You know, you've heard me say many times, coaches coach against coaches. And that's been validated and driven home to me even more with the conversations I've had this offseason. So that particular play was what we call a high-low concept, which means you have a route that's closer to the line of scrimmage and a route that's a little deeper. It's a high route and a lower route. That works effectively against zone. And then you also stretch the zone horizontally. So that creates voids. And it was really well designed, and then you have to make the throw on time, because in the NFL, those voids close quickly if you're late.
And I bring up the Jonnu Smith catch prior to the touchdown, because on that play, Denzel Perryman had to leave the field on that second down completion. He was hurt, and that created an extra timeout for Arthur Smith. The Chargers either inserted Drew Tranquil, who's a rookie, or it was DeZubner, who now plays for the Titans, because DeZubner didn't play many snaps last year.
It wasn't him, because he didn't play a snap of linebacker last year.
Okay, so it was the rookie Tranquil. And Arthur Smith, in this timeout, calls this opposite high-low concept to the touchdown to Sharp, a play that puts a lot of stress on the second and third-level defender in the middle of the field. And in this case, I believe it was the rookie that had just entered the game.
Yeah, and what you know, when you're playing a team that plays a lot of zone, you're trying to put zone defenders in conflict with the route concepts. That's what you try to do, because most zones now in the NFL, and this was not the case years and years ago, but most zones now, guys don't just sit in at a landmark. That was the term used years ago. You play to a landmark, particularly the underneath coverage. Now it's much more zone matching up. Even though you're in zone, you're looking for routes and you're matching up to routes in your area. So what you're trying to do is put a zone defender in conflict with either how much space he has to cover or how many receivers catch his eye and therefore he reacts to. So that's what you try to do. And it's tougher in the tight red zone because there's not as much space.
Yeah, and I'm curious. Let's take a step further for our listeners. When you're breaking down tape, just personally, what are you considering the high and low red zone yard lines? Most defenses, I would guess, say the 6 and in for low red zone, because that's when they change their techniques and their calls. Are you considering the same yardage lines?
The way I do it, just, and again, everybody does it differently, so there's no right or wrong here. Just for my own sense, I look at the what I call the tight red zone, 10 yards in, and the high red zone, 11 to the 20-yard line. That's the way I look at it, just because every defense changes at different spots. And it's funny, I actually had a great conversation. We spoke for a long time with Carson Palmer, and I've known him since he came out as a rookie, which was 2003, and he talked about some teams don't change one thing in the red zone. And he says other teams have a totally different defense in the red zone. So it all depends on the team. So, you know, maybe it's random the way I do it, but I just needed a way to catalog it. So I go 1 to 10 and 11 to 20.
Greg Cosell with us on your home for the Titans, 104.5 The Zone. Greg, last week you said we could see Arthur Smith and the Titans offense build on the screen game to Derrick Henry on first down opportunities. Were there some things on the third down analysis that you made that you think the Titans could build on in 2020?
Well, to me, and we spoke about this when we talked about Jonnu Smith, and again, you know, there's not been an offseason on the field, and so it's more difficult for any of us to know exactly the kinds of things they're talking about virtually because we're not there. But to me, Jonnu Smith is a player because he's incredibly athletic that you can start to really move around the formation and use him in different spots and on different kind of routes. Because he, to me, he has intermediate route running ability and he has vertical route running ability. He can stretch. He can line up at that boundary X on the backside of what we call trips. In other words, you have three wide receivers to the wide side of the field, and Jonnu Smith would be the single receiver to the short side of the field or the boundary. I could see him being a bigger factor in the pass game. The other player who always fascinated me, guys, and you know, I talked about him during this past season, is I really like Firkser. And I, you know, again, I don't know what the plan is. Smith is really talented and really athletic, but Firkser, to me, almost all the time he plays, he seems to be a meaningful part of what they do, and he's run some really good routes, and he's got some athletic ability as well.
Yeah, and one of the things that we were discussing, Paul and I, recently, is how they make up for the loss of Tajay Sharpe, who also played a significant role in this offense, especially in the second half of the season, and I wonder if some of those 25 touches from Sharpe can go to Firkser in some cases.
And keep one thing in mind, too, guys, is, you know, there's a lot of teams. Everybody automatically assumes third and six or seven plus, you're lining up with three wide receivers. I've been just grinding away watching tape every single day of a lot of different teams. And there's teams that line up on third and eight with two tight ends on the field if their tight ends are athletic. So it doesn't automatically have to be three wide receivers. You know, you can work on different formations, different looks, and you can have Smith and Firkser are on the field with Brown and Davis. It doesn't mean you have to go three wide. I'm not saying that, first of all, you do nothing 100% of the time, but it doesn't automatically mean that you have to have three wide receivers on the field just because it's third and six or seven or eight.
Cosell with us of NFL Films here on the 180.
Speaking of those personnel groupings, what did you see trend-wise with Tannehill and what the Titans did with Tannehill on third down? Anything they leaned towards or away from with him as they got into their rhythm during the season and had the success that they did?
Well, I think that, you know, certain teams, you know, have particular concepts that they like. And then, you know, it's funny, when you watch tape of so many teams, you see a lot of the same things. No one is really reinventing anything. It's just what concepts they choose to use in their playbook. You know, and there's a concept that I think a lot of teams run. It's called dagger. It's two routes from the same side of the formation, and it's another way to talk about it is based on the routes is the 96 combination. So you have an inside receiver running a straight vertical route. That's a 9 route. And then you have the receiver just outside of him running a deep dig. That's a 6 route. So it's called a 96 combination from the same side of the formation. And it's a really good route concept. It's really effective against zone. You can certainly run it against man, but it's a really, really an effective route concept against zone. You know, I thought they did a really nice job with what I call natural rub concepts. They did that on third and short to medium. That's a really good tactic to attack man coverage. And by that, I mean people think of that as a pick. So you're trying not to do it in a way that it gets called as offensive pass interference. But by the nature of your route concepts to the same side of the formation, you're trying to create traffic for the defense. So when they're playing man, the man defenders have to work through traffic. So it's kind of a natural rub or a natural pick. And you call those plays simply to get a first down. So if it's third and three, you're happy to get 5 yards, but you get the 5 yards.
I've got a Greg Cosell film watching process question that I've had for a while that I want to ask you about, and specifically in regards to Ryan Tannehill. Greg, when you're watching film, how often, and I know that you're not in the huddle, you're obviously not calling the play as the offensive coordinator or anything like that, but how often can you tell when a quarterback is hitting his first read on a play? Based on the confidence in which he throws it, how quickly he throws it, looking at his eyes, looking at his head movement maybe on the play, is that something you can tell when you watch film? And it, if that's the case, can you see when a quarterback is taking time and going through their progression and hitting a second, third, or fourth option?
A good part of the time, not 100%, because the one thing I will always say is that you don't know how he's coached. But you can pretty much tell where his eyes and his body movement goes initially, what side of the formation he's looking to. You know, so let's say it's a 3-by-1 set. Sometimes, depending on the defense and depending on any alerts they may have based on coverage, but if he immediately looks to the 3-receiver side, then you know he's working to the trip side of the formation as his initial read. And then the routes, I watch the routes and then versus the coverage. If it's man, I see what the routes are. If it's zone, it's the same routes, but you might throw it to a different guy. So you can get a sense. And like I said, it's not 100% because you just don't know, and I never presume to know, but because I see so many of the same routes, and like I said, there's not 1,000 route concepts, you know, you get a pretty good sense.
Greg Cosell with us. Greg, let's discuss adjustments for a moment. How much more man coverage did you see from defenses facing the Titans when Tannehill took over?
You know, I don't have a percentage. I wasn't charting it, but I mean, you see a lot more man coverage in the NFL nowadays overall than you did years ago. You know, I think that teams really have to become proficient at beating man. And normally, if a team is going to play man on third and longer yardage, 7, 8, 9, your receivers do have to win one-on-one matchups. That's critical. You can have man beater concepts, but the longer the yardage, the tougher it is to have concepts that break down the man coverage. Your receivers do at some point have to create some kind of separation, and that's where your quarterback has to turn a loose. You know, that's the way it is. I remember years ago, and I've never forgotten this conversation. This was when I was really first getting into this in great detail. I remember having a conversation with Troy Aikman, and he said, if you're getting man coverage and, you know, your receivers are not winning, your quarterback still has to throw the ball. Otherwise, he just sits in the pocket, he says, and then people yell at the quarterback. He said, what you need then are new receivers, because if it's man coverage, your receivers have to give you a place to throw the ball.
The Colts were a team that used much more man coverage on third down in the second matchup compared to the first. And you mentioned the man beating plays that they incorporated for the Titans offense. One of those, we mentioned him last week for the Baltimore matchup with Tannehill on first down to Khalif Raymond for the big touchdown. They also connected on a big third down play in the Indianapolis matchup, the second go around against man coverage.
Yeah, you know, and again, I remember the second one, the Tannehill or Raymond 40-yard touchdown, and that was what we call a deep over route from the slot. It was a great throw. See, there's an example of a great throw by Tannehill that needs precise ball placement down the field. And, you know, maybe fans just come to think, oh, you know, he made a good throw. Those are not easy routine throws, but, you know, you have to make those throws. The good quarterbacks make those throws. You know, and that's a good route. You know, an over route is basically, it's not quite a post. You take it a little more across the field, but it's not a true crossing route. The angle is not quite as sharp, and it's not a post where the angle's a little more vertical. So when it's in between, we call it an over route. And the reason a route like that is good versus man, because you're running away from man coverage. You know, ideally your receiver creates enough separation. He's just running away from man coverage. The old bromide, so to speak, in football, and obviously it's a little more detailed than this, is you find a void, you find space versus zone, you run away from man.
It's maybe not directly in line with a Tannehill discussion here, but in bringing up the Colts, one of their defensive tactics that I know would show up, and we've seen it several years now, is on third down, the use of stunts up front by their defensive line. And there were multiple stunts and concepts that caused some issues for the Titans in pass pro last year throughout the entire season. How much did you note that? And how many teams were doing that against the interior of the offensive line for Tennessee?
I noticed that quite a bit. And I think a lot of that had to do with Nate Davis, the rookie at right guard, who just needs, you know, ideally he'll improve. He struggled a bit with what we call accelerated vision. That's his recognition of stunts. Also, he just needs to get better in one-on-one pass protection. But again, he was a rookie. But, you know, that's the kind of thing you see when you just sit and watch pass plays, you know, one after the other, and you watch a ton of pass plays. So, yeah, you know, when teams struggle with something, you know you're going to get it. I mean, that's just the way it works in this league. They're going to play to your weakness, and you're going to have to deal with that weakness. Otherwise, it'll cause some problems.
Did they improve on that? Did they improve on that as the season progressed?
You know, I can't remember exactly. It's just something, you know, I noticed that kept showing up on third down, and that it at times showed, you know, caused problems. I can't remember if it didn't cause problems in the last two or three games or in the playoffs, but obviously they didn't throw the ball very much until the Chiefs playoff game.
Tannehill's mobility bailed them out of that sometimes?
Yeah, you know, the thing I like about Tannehill is I think that he's very athletic, but he uses that as what I call a parachute. He doesn't just bail. He will stand in the pocket and he will wait to deliver, and he will leave the pocket when he absolutely has to. So to me, that's a good thing. Some others might think, hey, maybe he should move more. That, you know, that is a, again, different people have different points of view on that. But I think that at the end of the day, it's hard to teach a guy to be patient in the pocket. He either is or he isn't. A lot of guys bail too early. Some guys can bail too early and be great, great players. Patrick Mahomes bails too early a lot, but he obviously compensates, and he's a great, great passer, and he has unbelievable downfield vision on the move, maybe the best in the league. So some guys can do that, but for most quarterbacks, you don't want them to leave the pocket too early. You want them to stand there and go through that progression.
Don't want to let you go before we get you on the news of the league recently, wondering how you envision a Cam Newton, Bill Belichick offense.
Oh, I'm really intrigued by it, because the one thing you can say about Bill Belichick is he plays to his talent and he plays to the opponent. So you will see a different offense than the offense that he had for years with Tom Brady. You will absolutely see the quarterback run game, you know, assuming Newton's healthy, and apparently he is. So I'm really fascinated to see it. But the one thing about Bill Belichick is he plays to what he has, and he plays to his opponent. He's not grounded or stuck with one point of view as this is the way I play. So he, to me, is a fascinating coach for someone like Cam Newton.
I also wonder what it means for a player like Sony Michel and how they can use him similar to the way they would use McCaffrey in Carolina, where he would be the primary target for Cam Newton. Same for Edelman.
Yeah, I'm not sure Michelle's that kind of receiver. You know, that's going to be the other interesting factor. You know, they do have a bunch of backs. They don't have, hardly anybody has a McCaffrey. You know, he's just one of those guys. But it'll be very interesting because, you know, their offense, to me, it'll be different. That's the bottom line. We don't know exactly what it will be. Obviously, he just signed. No one's on the field right now. Hopefully, they get on the field when they're supposed to. We were all hoping for that. But it's hard to know the answer to that.
Greg, thank you as always. Always a fascinating visit with you.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much.
Greg Cosell joins us weekly, exclusively right here on The Zone each and every Wednesday.